Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
This is the Andy Griffin Show here on KDXU. Thank you for tuning in this morning. It's we're at 9 minutes after 9 o'clock on this beautiful Tuesday morning, the 29th day of April, and I have a doctor in the house. Does somebody call a doctor? He's here. Tyler Owens is here. Dr. Tyler Owens, and Dr. Owens is a neurologist and a hospitalist, and I thought that'd be a good way to start. What is a hospitalist?
Hospitalist is, it's a new specialty, actually. So it used to be the clinic doctor.
Let's get the microphone a little closer so we can hear you. Yeah, a little closer. There we go.
It used to be, a couple decades ago, your clinic doctor would follow you through your hospital stay.
Right, right.
And now, not anymore. Now we have our, hospital has their own doctors.
That is cool.
So it takes a lot of communication.
So do you make rounds then? Like you,
exactly. Yeah, we literally will round the hospital. So there's patients on every floor, and we'll do what we call gravity rounds, maybe, where we'll start at the top and go down, or we'll do anti-gravity rounds, start at the bottom and go up. And we just see all the patients on the list.
Now, how do does each hospitalist have a specialty? Like, you're a neurologist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work? Do you get assigned? Are there, okay, certain rooms, they don't need me because you've got a foot injury or whatever?
Exactly, exactly. Okay. So any acute neurologic issue, we see in any department within the hospital. And how it works really is you have generalists, you have hospitalists who are medicine physicians.
Right.
And they'll say, you know, this looks like a neurologic problem. Let's call Dr. Owens and have him consult.
Okay.
And a lot of times the patient has had a stroke.
Oh, and that's probably being an area here with a lot of seniors.
Yes.
Probably something that happens quite commonly.
It is common. Probably half the patients we see in the hospital for stroke.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you, well, first of all, let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about Tyler Owens a little bit. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? All that stuff.
I'm originally from Albuquerque.
Okay.
You know, another desert land.
And Albuquerque, I just learned this. I didn't know this until last year. Pretty high elevation, right? It gets pretty cold there.
Yeah. So I was up in the foothills about 6,000.
Woo, that's up there.
Yeah. People are like, it must be really hot there. I'm like, actually, it's quite cold.
Yeah. You get, I guess, plenty of snow there and all that.
Yeah, it snows, and then within a day or two, it melts. But it definitely would snow.
Nice. Albuquerque. Okay, well, go on with your kind of bio here.
Originally from Albuquerque, born and raised, came to Utah for college, went to medical school in Southern California, went back to New Mexico to do my neurology residency, and then did a stroke fellowship at Wake Forest in North Carolina.
A stroke fellowship. So that's just basically you're treating
stroke patients. That's kind of my super specialty. So my specialty is neurology, and then my specialty on top of that is stroke. But I've had my eye on St. George for a long time.
Nice.
I wanted to move here for a long time, ever since I visited in college.
I'm happy to be here. So did you go to Dixie State then?
No, I actually went to BYU.
Oh, you went to BYU. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Nice. And then, but you came down during college and said, this is a cool place.
Yeah, we drove down to Zion.
You like my view, by the way? Look behind you, the red rocks and everything.
Yeah,
pretty
I'm
awesome.
Quite envious.
Yeah.
To take a picture.
Yeah, you might make more money than me, but I got the $1 million view right here.
I don't have any windows.
We're talking again with Dr. Tyler Owens. You're a dad. You got three kids?
Three little boys.
How little?
So 4, 6, and 8.
Pretty little.
Yeah.
Pretty little.
Yeah. And growing every day.
It's I always believed it's a responsibility of dad to teach them how to throw the ball and to how to do get them interested in stuff.
Yes.
And they might just actually be good at one or two of them and want to pursue them.
Yeah, and so it's like that balance of I want to expose you to all these different opportunities
in terms
of sports and things, and then you kind of choose your own path. Now, I have a strong bias for soccer.
Do you? Okay.
So
you're a former soccer
right
guy?
Now.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, T-ball, if they want to play chess, whatever, I'm all for it.
Now, you must be fast, because you got to be fast and have good endurance to be a soccer guy.
Yeah, well, and I'm slower now, but they're fast.
They're fast. Okay, that's good. Yeah, when I went to high school, now I'm a little older than you, Tyler. When I went to high school, the soccer was kind of a, a fringe sport. And I remember the soccer coach knew me from football. He was an assistant football coach, recruited me hard to play soccer. He really bad wanted me to play because, most of the guys I knew didn't play soccer. They weren't into soccer. In fact, I was a PE class soccer star. You know, I scored like 8 goals during PE and the coach, he really wanted me to play soccer. I never did because I looked and all the guys that were playing soccer were your size. You know, they were 5'10 and 160 pounds. And I'm like, I can't keep up with those
guys. That's exactly right. I'm actually 5'10 and 160 pounds.
Really? Hey, that's pretty amazing. Good guess, huh? Nice. So, all right. Very cool. How long have you been in St. George now?
It'll be 4 years in June.
Okay. And I don't want your address, but what part of town are you living in right now?
Kind of up by Little Valley. Not okay. In Little Valley, but near there.
Okay, so first thing I think of Little Valley and pickleball. Have you picked up pickleball yet?
I haven't.
No? Okay.
I've attempted to learn with my nephews, and they demolished me. It wasn't very fun, so I'll have to try it again.
You know what's worse than losing to your nephews is if you go and play with some old dude who's like 75 or something, and you're like, oh, I'm going to smoke this old guy, and then he dinks and hits it on the lines, and you're just like, oh.
Sounds man, like a I personal
just,
story.
Just got embarrassed. Yes, no, it has happened. It has happened. So, all right, we're talking neurology. That's what I wanted to get to next was maybe explain to people what neurology is. I have, unfortunately, way too much personal experience with neurology now because of my leg problem, but explain what it is, what that entails.
So it entails quite a bit, actually. So we think of neurology, think of the brain, but actually not just the brain. We treat the spinal cord, the nerves that come out of the cord, and the muscles. So that's a lot of territory.
That is. So that's about the whole body.
Nerve disease in the foot, like a diabetic neuropathy, that falls within the realm of neurology.
Okay, I have neuropathy, but I don't have diabetes, believe it or not.
Yeah, so, and that's...
Which is called idiopathic, which means they don't know why.
Yeah, idiopathic, about half of the distal nerve disease is idiopathic. We can't figure out the cause, and it's tough. It's tough.
I was going to say, that seems like that would be a frustrating area to be a doctor because...
It is.
At this point, we don't know the answers to a lot of the questions.
Yeah, and it is. And I think it's important, however, to say, it's okay to say, I don't know.
Mm.
You know, we're just not there yet with the science. And just kind of, that's the reality. Sometimes we don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's only so many tests we can do.
That's a hard thing to say, though. When they say, you're a neurologist, you're the doctor, tell me what's going on. And when your answer is, I'm not sure. That's
a similar feeling is when you're giving a bad prognosis. Say, a patient isn't going to make it. There's nothing more you can do. It's just that. It's tough. It's nice to be there and have that connection with the patients, but it's tough to deliver the prognosis like that.
Now, you talked about your specialty, your kind of super specialty being strokes.
Yeah.
Tell us about what a stroke is, first of all, and then how common it is among people, say, the retirement age or older.
It's very common. So some numbers for you. 800,000 people a year in the United States have a stroke.
Wow.
Almost, you know, next decade, we're going to hit 1 million. There's a lot of people having strokes. And most strokes are what we call ischemic strokes, which is an occlusion of an artery in the brain.
Okay.
You can also have a brain bleed.
Wow. That sounds serious.
And of the 800,000 that have a stroke, about 165,000 die.
Oh, so, first time.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a stroke and that's it. There's nothing you can do.
There's nothing to do. Yeah.
Wow.
And it's just, we call them catastrophic strokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but it's part of the territory we deal with.
So Dr. Blodgett comes on. He's the county health official. He always talks about heart disease being the number one killer. Stroke is not heart disease. It's a different thing. It's a brain thing,
correct?
Right?
Correct. However, interrelated. So if you have heart disease, your risk of stroke is right there next to it.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So if you, for example, have disease in the arteries of the heart, it's very likely you have disease in the arteries of the brain through the same risk factors.
Right. That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay. So say I'm around someone who is having a stroke. I don't know what kind of stroke. All I know is this person is not acting normal. Maybe they're slurring their speech. What something is happening. What would be my course of action at that point besides calling 911?
Yeah, so any concern about a stroke, time is of the essence. We recommend you call 911.
Okay.
Common symptoms include like language, loss of language. So person's not speaking or they're repeating the same thing. And it's a really frustrating experience for them because they can think of the word, they just can't get it out.
You can't say it, yeah.
Or maybe their speech is really slurred. There's a acronym. It's called BFAST. So B, balance. They can have balance issue. Eyes. Mm. You can have vision loss.
Wow.
Yep. Face, facial droop is very common. A new facial droop. Arms or legs. You can have weakness or numbness. Okay. And then speech or language loss. And then T in BFAST stands for time. It's time to call 911.
Time to get after.
It's much better to go to the emergency department and say, oh, this is a stroke mimic, go home, rather than, you know, sit in bed or at home and just hope that you get better. Because right. we have treatment times. We want to act quickly. If you're having a stroke, we can give clot-dissolving agents, and we can even get a catheter in the brain and suck the clot out these days. This is a new treatment we're doing.
Pretty
so
cool.
Outcomes in terms of stroke are much, much improved over the last few years if you present as early as possible.
Now, what about some of the treatments, the home remedy things to help get you to the point where first responders can get there, like giving them some baby aspirin, or I heard drinking a lot of water or something like that would help?
We don't recommend giving an aspirin, actually, if you have these we call vocal deficits, because it is possible that it's a brain bleed. We don't know until we get a CT scan.
And that would make it worse.
And look.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's more likely it's an ischemic stroke, not a bleed, but you don't know. And if you give an aspirin and they are bleeding, that's obviously going to make the bleed worse.
Now, what about the people that live alone? My dad had a stroke last year, and fortunately, my sister was there when it happened. It was a, I guess, maybe mini stroke. I don't know if that's really a thing, but it was a minor stroke, and he was okay in the long run. But what about if you live alone? There are a lot of people out there, you know, especially women, because guys tend to die younger, who are alone. What if you feel a stroke coming on, or you feel like something's not right? What do you do at that point?
And that's tough. Sometimes we have patients that are found down. You know, and these, they have a large stroke and they're unable to make it to the phone.
Yeah.
And they're found by a family member or even a neighbor, or the police are just doing a wellness check because no one's seen them for a couple of days.
Right.
And that's really unfortunate because they've missed that window of treatment.
Right.
But hopefully it is a minor stroke, and hopefully they can get to the phone and make that phone call and get an ambulance to come get them.
Yeah. And other than that, there's not a lot they can do, right?
Not a lot. It's really sad when these cases come from the door and they're days out from their stroke.
Okay. So, you know, stroke is scary because, like, it seems like with some other things that happen, even a heart attack, you know you've got some heart problems and it's coming up. But stroke seemingly comes out of nowhere, doesn't it?
Kind of does, kind of doesn't. I mean, vast majority of time you're going to have the risk factors. The big risk factor is actually high blood pressure.
Oh.
It's like join the club, right? A lot of people have high blood pressure.
Yeah.
It does come on suddenly. You know, you'll be at the grocery store and all of a sudden, you know, you got your left side's numb or you can't talk.
Right.
So something about it coming on suddenly makes it harder to identify. You're almost in disbelief, like denial. So it's important, you know, we're in American healthcare 2.0. We're really good. You get into the emergency department, our times are great, we can take great care of you. But really we want to do American healthcare 3.0. We want to focus on prevention. Stop it before it happens. Because you might not feel that sick, but if you have high blood pressure, a stroke is very possible.
Now, I'm curious, there have been a lot of stuff in the news lately about the weight loss drugs and how that may change the entire face of healthcare. If people are less obese, maybe not obese at all anymore, they tend to have, you know, their heart is better, their blood pressure might be better as well. Do you see the weight loss industry, the weight loss drugs that are making differences now, do you see that being a big factor in strokes down the road?
I think so. I think it will never replace a good diet and exercise. However, there's definitely going to be a place on the shelf for these medications, I think. And that's because it isn't, to some degree, getting to the root of an unhealthy metabolism. It's good for controlling the glucose in the bloodstream, which is controlling the lipids and all that, all those risk factors for stroke.
I think probably you would agree with this, and any doctor will tell you, if you're just taking it and you haven't changed anything else, then you are at risk of, if you stop taking it, going right back to where you were. And even if you do keep taking it, we don't know necessarily the long-term effects of some of those. So you need to pair it with
spot on.
A good diet and some exercise as well.
Yeah, and I would say try to optimize a good diet and good habits, and then maybe adjunct adding another medication if you really need to, especially if you're a diabetic.
Yeah. I am actually taking a semaglutide right now, and it's working for me.
Awesome.
But I'm kind of a unique person in that I've always been very active. We were talking about pickleball before we went on the air. I love playing pickleball. We play several times a week, and we like to go hiking and things like that. And so for me, I felt like, it was a natural fit because basically all it does is make you eat less.
Yeah,
you feel full faster,
right?
The one thing I did notice though is I got tired easier, because I'm not getting as much fuel, to fuel the machine. I realized I need to make sure the first thing I eat every day, or the main thing that I get, is enough protein to help fuel my body, because I was running out of gas at 7 o'clock at night.
Interesting.
So I would say, I'm not an expert in the field, but I would say at this point, those folks that choose to take a semaglutide or a Wegovy or what is it? What do we have? Zepbound and Ozempic and Mounjaro. You have all these now. Make sure you get a lot of protein.
Yes.
That's important.
And actually, that's one of the newer areas of diet that's been, it's a new focus, is protein.
Yeah.
Is getting enough protein. So, at least a kilogram per pound a day, maybe 1.5.
So you talked about stroke a little bit and the treatments, and the best treatment is, well, you mentioned time is the number one thing, getting time. Someone in.
Yeah.
Does that mean that you're going to do things at the hospital that we would not be able to do at home far as treatment?
Exactly. So,
what are they?
Yes. With this arterial occlusion of the brain, this blood vessel's clotted off.
Right.
We can give a medication called Tenecteplase.
Okay.
And that can work to dissolve the clot. It works within minutes.
Really?
Doesn't always dissolve it, but we know that if we give this medication, the chance of a better outcome is much higher.
Okay.
It comes with some risks, but in general, it's better to get Tenecteplase if you're a candidate for it.
Were you done?
To be a candidate of it, you have to present within 4.5 hours.
Okay.
Of last known normal of the stroke onset.
Really important.
So you have to come in real quick.
Yeah. With the blood clot, when you're talking about the blood clot in the brain, the stroke is essentially your brain is not getting blood. It's blocked.
Yeah,
it's,
part of the brain is clogged. It's not getting blood. Yeah.
And that's why you have things like the numbness, or you have the speech problem,
right,
or things like that. That's exactly what a stroke is, I guess. It's just not getting oxygen
it's like,
and blood.
It's plumbing, and one of the pipes is clogged. You open it back up.
Wow. That is this something that, as you've seen, as your young career has developed, you look young to me, although there's a little bit of white in the beard.
Yeah,
you're not that young. But have you seen are strokes getting more common compared to 10 years ago or 20 years ago?
Well, I have to say in Utah, I believe the data is saying that it's pretty stable, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in terms
That's good.
Of mortality, deaths. We have excellent stroke care in Utah. We're actually number one in terms of time to treat. So if you come into the emergency department, 87% of patients get this Tenecteplase less than 45 minutes. We're the only state in the country to do that. And I can tell you at St. George Regional, our goal is less than 30 minutes.
That's incredible.
We can do that safely. So I hope everyone has confidence, all the locals here, to come and see us right away.
So with a stroke my dad had a couple of years ago, it was, like I said, it was kind of a mini stroke. It didn't feel like it was life-threatening.
Yeah.
Was he treated with that? What's a name I can't pronounce?
Tenecteplase. It's possible.
Was he? Okay.
So, we do weigh, there's some risk with it. So we like to see a disabling deficit in order to pull the trigger on that medication. So obviously, if you're not able to walk or not able to talk, the benefit outweighs the risk. But if it's just like I have a little tingling in my finger, we might discuss with the patient that maybe it's not worth giving this medication.
Okay. Well, he was definitely having some speech issues. So he definitely needed something to help, restore the blood and oxygen
to
his brain.
That would be very concerning. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, whatever you did for him, it was amazing. Way to go. Because he's doing great.
Awesome.
In fact, he turns 90 next month, and he's still out swimming 3 times a week.
Love
and
it, yeah. Lots of golf courses. We got to utilize those here.
we were talking about this last night at dinner. The fact that that medicine has come so far in helping us live longer, but unfortunately, a lot of times like Alzheimer's or dementia are getting us where our bodies. My father-in-law, for example, lives up in Riverton. Mm-hmm. His body is pretty good. I mean, he's in pretty good shape physically, but his mind is almost gone now. He's got Lewy body dementia.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and that's a unique form of dementia.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Typically, people suffer from Alzheimer's.
Right.
And typically, if you have Alzheimer's, you have vascular risk factors, stroke risk factors.
Right. Okay.
So if you're preventing stroke and you're preventing heart attack, you're also working to prevent dementia.
I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. That's good. So do you have any thoughts on people living longer, physically being able to live longer, but mentally not being? We just thought it was kind of an interesting kind of effect of modern medicine, is that we are able to make our bodies. I mean, you're saving lives all the time treating strokes, but mentally sometimes we haven't caught up yet. I noticed there's some new treatments for Alzheimer's, a couple of new medications.
Yeah.
But they're only good if you get it early on, because it'll help delay it. But
right, and in the delay, it's significant, but it's. It's not a 180 turnaround.
Right. Yeah. It just slows it down a little.
Right, right. I think the best thing we can do is, just like with stroke prevention, is, exercise is actually really important. So you don't have to do a marathon.
Yeah.
But 3 or 4 times a week, 30, 45 minutes each time, and just going into what we call zone 2, where you're out of breath enough where you can't really hold a conversation well.
Right.
Touching that area.
Kind of like me climbing 3 flights of stairs. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. that is really healthy for blood vessels. That really maintains healthy blood vessels. The small blood vessels, tissue factors released where they're going to maintain their vitality.
Get a little
and that's what you need
going.
To prevent dementia, is you need healthy blood vessels.
So exercise not only helps to keep your body good, but it also helps your mind.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. More than doing my crossword in terms of preventing dementia is exercise.
Really?
Yep.
Really? Because I think a lot of people believe that I'm doing a crossword, I'm doing a logic, I'm doing all these things, that's going to keep my mind sharp, but actually keeping your body sharp will help more than anything.
Keep the blood vessels healthy. Yeah,
wow.
It's all about the blood vessels. Healthy blood vessels,
amazing.
Healthy brain. And sure, crossword puzzles and things are helpful.
Yeah.
But the limiting thing is if you have unhealthy blood vessels.
Now, one of the factors, Doc, with that is the fact that as you get older, things kind of hurt and ache and stuff, and it's harder to exercise if my dad's got the sciatic nerve problem going on right now. I've got a bad back and this paralyzed leg, and so as I get older, I'm like, I want to do more. I want to do this, but gosh, it kind of sucks.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we look at things like, if someone falls and breaks their hip, typically that's a huge hit on their lifespan.
Yeah.
They're not really able to move. So
breaking the hip isn't going to kill them, but not being able to move might.
Right, indirectly gets people.
Yeah. I've seen that with, I had a burn on my foot, and they would not, they're like, you got to stay off of that foot for, I think it was 6 months, but I wasn't allowed to, I could exercise my
mentally,
upper body.
You feel it mentally too.
You really do. And besides the fact that I couldn't exercise, I also wasn't allowed to get in the pool, which we have a pool in the yard. I'm like, come on, man, you're killing me.
You.
Yeah.
Jump in.
Yeah. It's a reality. As you get older, sometimes it's hard to exercise we used to hike a lot, my wife and I. And, since I've had a couple of back surgeries, after 30 minutes of walking, hiking, my back's killing me.
Not enjoyable anymore.
Yeah. Kind of ruins the effect. But any of advice on those, I guess take some ibuprofen and do it anyway, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you want to, it's that balance. Obviously, you don't want to injure yourself further. You want a good pain control regimen. There's some good docs in town for that.
Yeah.
And you want to try to keep moving, though. You got to try to keep moving.
Now, a couple of things. We're going to take a commercial break here, so you can chill for a minute. I did want to note, folks, they are powering down the 890 signal and switching to the softer signal right now for those that are listening on AM as they work on the tower. We're working on getting this thing. It's a long-term fix. It's kind of like Dr. Olson here or Owens here trying to fix. You want a long-term fix. You don't want a short-term, one-day-only thing. So they're working on the tower, so our signal is not going to be be as strong for the second half of this show. But we'll still be going here with Dr. Tyler Owens from the St. George Regional Hospital. He's a neurologist. He's a smart guy. We got a smart guy in the house today. Let's take a break.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Good morning and welcome back. I'm Andy Griffin. Yeah, we've got some right now issues with the transmitter. They are actually working on the tower even as we speak. We have a signal, but it's not as strong on the AM right now. I would encourage anybody that wants to listen to go to 92.5 FM or 106.1 FM. You can also listen through our app. Through the App Store, just search for KDXU. Or you can go to our website, 890kdxu.com. We're streaming live online as well, so there are places you can access this. You might just have to work a little harder at it. So talking with Dr. Tyler Owens. Now, how many years did you have to go to school to become a neurologist? Seems like that's a pretty big one.
Well, I did five in college.
I'm sorry, wrong mic. I changed. Okay, there we go. That was my bad, not yours.
Five for college because I did a bonus year because I changed course. I wanted to go into graphic design when I started.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to do that once, I think. It's a pretty popular
major. It's fun. It's fun, yeah. And then 4 years for medical school, and then 4 years for residency, and then a year of fellowship.
That's like 14 years.
So it's a good run. Yeah.
That's 14 years.
It's a journey.
Holy cow. That is a big commitment. And everybody talks about, well, doctors make the big bucks. Yeah, but they go to school and borrow a lot of money and go to school for a long, long time.
It's true. School is life.
I went to college for, I think, 5 years total. And I just have a bachelor's degree. I don't have all those other ones. My son, you met my son. Uh-huh. He was on the way out. He majored in educational psychology. So he went to school for, I think it was 7 or 8 years.
Oh, wow.
And now he's a realtor. He's like, yeah, that was good for a while, but I'm going to make some real money.
He's got a fallback plan.
for sure. So, all right. So you said you went to BYU, and then where did you go after BYU?
Western University, which is a medical school in Southern California.
Okay. I don't think they have sports teams, right, at Western?
No, medical school.
So, and then you had, after California, you went back to Albuquerque,
was it? Yep, back to the Albuquerque, University of New Mexico.
Okay. A Lobo, huh?
Mm-hmm. The nice. Lobos. Nice. Everyone's a Lobo. Woof, woof, woof.
Now, wait a minute. BYU and New Mexico used to be rivals. They're not in the same conference anymore, but they used to be in the old WAC together in the Mountain West. So how did you resolve it as an Albuquerque guy who went up to BYU?
Oh, it was easy. I was a BYU fan.
Okay.
I did go to some of the games when BYU would come into town, and it was just sad.
Yeah. It usually wasn't close. Yeah.
You know.
No. But New Mexico is usually better at basketball than football.
Yeah,
so,
that's true, yeah.
And then you landed in St. George. What do you do besides doctoring? I don't guess you have a ton of free time.
Yeah, I try to keep free time, you know. I keep that as a slot in my life. But I have three little boys, like I was saying.
There is no free time. Then.
And so, yeah, they're always on my mind. Yeah. And sometimes they're just literally in front of me with needs. So they keep me pretty busy. But I do like to hike, so that looks like a picture of Zion behind you there.
Yeah. Yeah, great white throne, yeah.
This beautiful, warm sunlight peering through the clouds. So I love Zion. I probably go to Zion maybe once or twice a month, Snow Canyon. Nice. Sometimes I'll go every week.
Did you ever hike out behind Tuacon? It's called Padre Canyon. You ever hike Padre Canyon
I've
behind
heard
Tuacon?
Of that. I have not
that
hiked
is a great
that.
Hike.
Padre Canyon,
and
okay.
Really, and the views.
I'll move that up the list.
Yeah, the views are unbelievable once you get
really?
Up there.
Really? Okay.
Because you're basically looking on the opposite side of everybody else sees Snow Canyon. You're on the opposite side of it
looking kind of down, is that right?
Snow Canyon, It's pretty phenomenal. So
I'll have to do that.
Yeah. Take your older boy, maybe your older two. I don't know if I want a four-year-old because there are, like the original part of the hike, there are no scary parts. But as you get closer to the canyon, there are some areas. I don't know if I'd want a little kid bouncing around, you know.
Right.
So anyway. Okay, Dr. Tyler Owens. And we talked a little bit about hospitalist. And this fascinated me because, now, I'd never been in the hospital a day in my life until I hit my 50s. And unfortunately, I've been in the hospital a lot lately. And they talked about hospitalists, and I was like, I don't remember, you know, and I hadn't been in the hospital before, but I remember, you know, from my mom or whoever being in the hospital that there was no such thing as a hospitalist. It was a strange thing. Tell me about the trend and the way that came to be as far as you know.
Yeah, so hospitalist has been around maybe two decades. Neurohospitalist, or a neurologist that strictly works in the hospital, has only been that whole term, whole idea, concept, has only been around since about 2010.
Wow, pretty
so
new.
Pretty fresh. Okay. So I would not have existed, you know, a little over a decade ago.
Would it be harder to have a practice and be a neurologist with his own practice versus working in the hospital? Would there be more?
It's this kind of good, better, best thing. And yeah. I kind of get it. I think it is better to just make it a specialty. The hospital is so complex, and the diseases and disorders are so complex. It's kind of better just to really narrow in and have that be your thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It used to be, by the way, if you had some kind of major trauma, they used to fly to Salt Lake or Vegas. Uh-huh. And St. George, I think, except for a burn center, St. George Regional now is pretty much got everything, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, they have fantastic surgeons, fantastic neurosurgeons. So one reason I convinced my mom to move here from Albuquerque is, like, we have really good health care here.
Nice.
You know?
Nice. So your mom is here, too?
Yeah, she's out in Ivins.
Nice. Yeah, nice. So very cool.
I actually took her out to Snow Canyon the other day.
Nice. Yeah, I love it. And neurology is an area, like, what was the hook for you? What made you want to be involved, especially the stroke specialist part of it?
You know, I wish I can give you this, like, you know, I had this epiphany.
Oh, come on, make something up.
I woke up in the middle of the night, and there was a ghost with a, you know, a brain. He said, you need to study this. You know, I was kind of into, like, art, you know, growing up, graphic design.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There was a, you know, Barnes & Noble that opened up in Albuquerque, and I just happened to pick up a psychology book.
Really?
Written by a neurologist, Dr. Amen. And I was looking at these brain scans. I'm like, this is really fascinating. And I read that book, and I'm like, you know, I kind of like to read. If I'm not told what to read, I like to read.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And so that kind of, I think, was the ember to my curiosity about the brain. And then took some psychology classes in college. Had a couple patient interactions. And I'm like, mm-hmm. You know, I like the brain. I like taking care of sick people. And it all fell into place.
So when you meet with someone in the hospital, you come by and they say, hey, this is probably we need to refer our neurology hospitalist to come in. What's it like? Is every situation different, or do you kind of have some protocol you go through with every patient when you first meet with them?
Yeah, there's definitely protocols that help with efficiency and just standard of care. Mm-hmm. But a lot of neurology, it's kind of Wild West. You got to figure it out. Yeah, yeah. You're the expert, and that's where, you know, all the training comes in. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, we'll get together and we'll just, as peers, discuss a case and get multiple opinions and, you know, the best, you know, kind of opinion averages out. And that's why I love my job, is it's not everything straightforward. It's kind of a puzzle.
Is St. George, obviously we have a large senior population. Are there other communities around the country where if they wanted to hire a neurology hospitalist, they might come looking for you? I'm thinking maybe Florida. I don't know what other retirement communities there are.
Yeah, definitely Florida, older population there. Mm-hmm. St. George, I don't know the numbers exactly, but we're up there.
It was like 60% for a while. I think it's gone down a little bit,
but we're definitely up there.
Any other places you can think of that would have a big, I'm trying to think, Florida, I can't get Florida out of my brain. But
yeah, Florida, I think, is a
maybe South Carolina or something. Anywhere that doesn't snow, I guess.
Yeah.
So Albuquerque is
good weather areas with golf courses.
Yeah. In fact, my daughter was telling me she was, after she graduates, her undergraduate, she's at BYU right now, but
nice.
Northern Arizona actually had the program she really wants is in Flagstaff.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, it snows there, right? A lot. Because they're right in the mountains.
Yep.
She's like, oh, it's Arizona. I said, yeah, not all of Arizona is desert and hot.
No.
Some of it, kind of like New Mexico. People in New Mexico, they think desert and hot, right? But Albuquerque, not as much.
And Flagstaff is a great example. I've had to pull over because of a snowstorm going through Flagstaff.
Yeah, Flagstaff, right up there in the Kaibab and in the forest.
Beautiful,
and
though.
Yeah, it is beautiful. We rode, my wife and I did a motorcycle trip years ago, and my wife is very good in that she makes sure, there's a saying, I don't know if you ride motorcycles, get all the gear all the time. So we had jackets, helmets, you know, gloves, boots, the whole works. And, you know, you go through Flagstaff in June and it's okay wearing all that gear because it's fairly cool still. But then we went down to Sedona after that. And wearing all the gear in Sedona was a challenge because Sedona is hot. Yeah, so we would go. I think we ended up spending more time in the little resort we were staying than riding the bike because I didn't want to put all that gear back on when it's 100 degrees.
You know, so, cook yourself.
Yeah, cook yourself. All right. We're talking with Dr. Tyler Owens. Let me see where we're. Oh, I got to get a break in. Man, we talked right through a break. So we'll take a break. Be back more with Dr. Owens right after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Andy. It's 9:51, so we're running short on time, but I did maybe want to get Dr. Tyler Owens is here. He is a neurologist, a hospitalist, and he specializes in strokes. Cover most of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Maybe if we could talk a little bit more about neurology, what it is and what, you know, it encompasses, because I think, and I can't speak for other specialties with doctors, but it seems like you guys have a lot.
Yeah.
Like what? Tell us what, yeah, that, what
that's
all
why there's
covers.
So many specialties within neurology, you know, and there's only so much we can actually do in the hospital in a way too. So, mm-hmm. In the hospital, we can get scans, we can get MRIs, we can get CT scans, we can look at the structure of the brain and of the spinal cord in really great detail. What we can't do really well, though, is look at the nerve and muscle health. That's a different test. That's called an EMG or electromyography.
I've had that, yeah.
They stick a little, it's real pleasant, right? They stick a little needle in your muscles.
So my leg is paralyzed from the knee down. So she's like doing the EMG, is that what you call it? Doing all the way up my leg and I can't feel anything. And then she gets to my knee and she pokes me with that. I'm like, ow! She's like, what? I've been doing this for the last half hour, man. I'm like, yeah, but I couldn't feel the other one. So,
yeah, it's a little needle, it goes into the muscle and muscle and nerve. It's all electrical conduction. So we look at the health of the nerve and the muscle through how it conducts the electrical signal.
Wow.
And there's different patterns. So we can say if it's a muscle disease, sometimes we can narrow into specific muscle diseases and nerve diseases as well.
That's amazing. You have all these tools, and yet you mentioned it's still a lot we don't know yet. About the brain and the nerves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's quite humbling. Quite humbling.
Like, I'm the expert, and I don't know, so, yeah.
We're constantly pushing the edge of our knowledge. And like you said, you know, sometimes we say it's idiopathic.
Yeah.
Which is we don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe come back in 5-10 years for new therapies.
I cannot tell you how many times I've gone to a doctor, and I tell them I have neuropathy. You know, I can't feel my feet. And they're like, oh, are you diabetic? No, I'm not.
They might be hoping you're diabetic. Yeah, they know what to do.
They're like, so, but you have neuropathy, huh? I said, yeah, it's idiopathic. And of course, every doctor knows what that means, which basically we're not sure why you have it. You just have it. I have some thyroid issues. Maybe it has something to do with that.
Yeah.
Perhaps. I don't know.
And it takes a battery of tests. You have to rule out a lot of things to get to that. We don't know. But a lot of times it is frustrating in that basket of we don't know and we're going to just treat your symptoms.
And that's a lot of doctoring, right, is ruling things out. People, you know, follow the science. The science says this. Well, sometimes science is proving things wrong.
Yep.
Not proving things right,
yep.
You know. In fact, sometimes there's no such thing as proving things right necessarily.
Exactly. Sometimes it's obvious. You say, well, this is this disease.
Yeah.
But a nerve that's acting up, I mean, that could be a lot of different causes. You can't see the tiny little molecules causing the issues until you run the test.
How many nerves do we have in our body? Millions?
Innumerable.
Yeah.
I mean, you get to these little branches, these little tiny nerves that you really can't see.
My dad likes to make the joke, this doesn't have to do with nerves, but it has to do with blood thinner. He's taking a blood thinner. He's almost 90 years old. And he gets, of course, when you're on blood thinner and your skin gets thinner, you bruise really easily. And he went to his doctor once and he said, hey, I bruise really easily. Can I stop taking the blood thinner? And the doctor basically said, well, you got two choices. You can live with the bruises or you can die. Those are pretty much your two choices at this point. So he's like, okay, I'll keep taking them.
Well, it's exciting because, like I was saying, there's new therapies.
Yeah.
There are new blood thinners that are a lot safer.
Really?
Yeah. So these newer agents like apixaban, rivaroxaban, are a lot safer than warfarin. actually just much more tolerable. You don't have to go in and get a lab every week or every month.
Yeah.
And they're just as effective for the vast majority of things, including stroke prevention.
I was going to say that, I mean, thinning blood is important for most strokes, not all strokes.
Yeah. And, you know, most people with risk factors should be on at least a baby aspirin. Now, you talk to your primary care provider about that if you need to be on one. But a lot of people need to take these newer agents, especially if you have atrial fibrillation. But the good news is that these newer agents have a slightly higher bleeding risk than just a baby aspirin. So they're quite safe.
Now, you mentioned, 800,000 people a year have strokes in the United States?
Yeah, like 795,000. So
incredible.
Rounded up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we're up at 340 million in the country. So,
yeah,
that's a pretty fairly high number when you consider, okay, you go 800 million, you go 200 million more kids who don't have strokes, right? I mean, very rarely.
Rarely, and those can be tricky cases because that's not your typical risk factors.
And then did you say of the 800 that have strokes that – maybe a fourth of them actually pass away?
Yeah, about 165,000.
Wow.
Don't make it through their stroke care. But if I can give you some good news.
Yeah, good news is
good. Because this is a good news station,
we've got 2 minutes left for good news.
Good news is that we can prevent about 80% of strokes from happening.
Oh.
Yeah, if we identify the risk factors. So just like blood pressure, if we're able to get your blood pressure under control.
I was going to say, that's the number one thing, though. As far as strokes, number one is blood pressure.
Blood pressure, yep.
Now, what if I have, I had high blood pressure when I was younger. My blood pressure has been fantastic recently in the last probably 10, 15 years. But what if I have other, you know, risk factors? Maybe I have high cholesterol, but my blood pressure is okay. Or maybe I have, you know, a history of heart disease in my family, but my blood pressure right now is okay. Does that exclude, am I excluded from worrying about stroke, or is it not necessarily?
Yeah, I mean, so we talked a lot about blood pressure, and that's kind of the most common risk factor.
Right.
And directly, it's associated with about 50% of strokes. So you definitely want to deal with blood pressure. Cholesterol right up there, though. Together, if you have high blood pressure and high cholesterol and diabetes, you know, the three together, they're a bad gang. So
I can see why doctors like you are going, you know what, maybe there are some long-term effects to something like Ozempic or Wegovy or those, but is it worth worrying about the long-term effect when the short-term effect is I can keep someone from having a stroke or having heart disease or having diabetes?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like, are these new medications a key? Like, are they going to make a big difference in terms of longevity? I think that's the story to be told, but it is exciting.
Yeah.
I personally, I don't feel like it will ever replace good exercise, habits, routines, and diet.
But if you can do them both.
You know, there's going to be those cases where adding that medication is probably beneficial.
Yeah. I think, you know, I remember years ago, a couple of years ago when they were first coming out, I talked with a couple of doctors and they're like, well, you don't know the long-term effects. We're not sure.
Right.
But every one of them that I've talked to have now kind of flipped and going, you know what? If it will make you healthy now.
Right.
It's probably worth maybe you getting colon cancer in 15 years.
Right.
Because you're going to die of a stroke or a heart attack in 2 years if you don't do something.
Right. And I think living your life is a big deal. Like, if you're overweight and you can't do the things you enjoy because you're overweight.
Yeah.
Losing that weight might give you some more valuable life years.
Quality of life. Yeah. He's Dr. Tyler Owens. Doctor, thanks for coming in today. Learned a lot.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
We're out of time. Another doctor on tomorrow. We're going to talk heart health tomorrow with Dr. Blake Gardner. Hopefully you'll join me then. This is the Andy Griffin Show. We'll talk to you tomorrow.